Asbury, second. Agar.
Present.
Anderson.
Here.
Anselmi Dalton.
Here.
Baldwin.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Boner.
Here.
Bouchard.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Ellis.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Hinsky.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Nethercott.
Here.
Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Yep.
Scott.
Here.
Von Platen.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Bebout.
Here.
30 present.
Prayer this morning by Senator Peterson. Would you all please rise?
Our Heavenly Father, we're gathered together this morning to do our Senate business. And before we begin, we beseech thee to bless our efforts this day. We are certainly grateful for all those blessings that come from thy hands, for the freedoms that we enjoy, for the heritage that we have, as we're reminded of our great heritage and these pictures that line our walls here of the Senate, of people that have come before us that have sacrificed and contributed to the efforts of this great state that we are privileged to live in. We're grateful for the privilege it is to serve. And we would ask thy blessings to be upon us as we debate and discuss issues that are important to this state, that we would be directed to do those things that would be of benefit to the citizens of this state. Be with our counterparts down the hall, for we know that they are in need of blessings. We appreciate them and this process. We are grateful, Father, for the blessings of our recovery of our past Senate president. Continue to buoy him up, be with him and his family. Be with our leadership in this, the Senate, at present, with health and strength. We're grateful for those that serve, our governor, our executive branch, our judicial branch, and all the employees and staff here that work for this great state of Wyoming. Bless us now with the help that we need to carry out our responsibilities. And these things we thank thee for and say in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen.
Senator Wasserberger, are you deaf? Do we have an update on former President Nicholas this morning by chance?
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, we do. The update today is that former Senator Nicholas is now out of the hospital. He is waiting around.
We're in trouble now, aren't we?
Yes. Yeah, he might return. But no, he has to stay around 10 days to check and make sure his liver is in good shape and that it is not rejected. So out of the hospital at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wasserberger. Yeah, how about that? With that order of business, reading correction approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February 1, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Bouchard, chairman.
Any objections? Being none, the report is adopted. The doctor for the day is Dr. Afzal Khan. Welcome to the Senate. Doctor, it's good to have you here. He's from the University of Wyoming Family Medical Center in Cheyenne. You'll have to be on your own, doctor. There's no nurse for the day. In 1958, Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne becomes part of the Strategic Air Command in keeping with its role as a missile base. Today is day 18 of a proposed 37-day session. Today is the last day for bills to be reported out of committee in the House of Origin. Tomorrow is the last day for Committee of the Whole in the House of Origin. We have a special guest today. It's our poet laureate, Eugene Gagliano. I believe that's correct. I hope so. My fellow senator, please join us in sharing some of his work as Wyoming's poet laureate. Eugene Gagliano, who was appointed by Governor Meade in July. Eugene is a retired elementary school teacher from Buffalo, Johnson County. It's where my father graduated from high school. And an award-winning author of 13 children's books. His writing celebrates life in Wyoming and the West. Please, senators, help me welcome Wyoming's poet laureate, Eugene Gagliano.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share my work, and thank you for what you people do. You do what I can't do. I do this. And I'm sorry, but it is Gagliano. The second G is silent. I want you to think about your state as I see it in poetic eyes. The first one is called Prairie Quilt. Asphalt ribbon winding, wandering like a seam in the prairie quilt. Barbed wire fences woven into the fabric of brush grasses. Black Angus cattle scattered like buttons of coal among the mounds of muted sage. Lone sentinel windmills clattering, caretakers of the wind. Cumulus clouds collapse into rain curtains over the vast horizon where the sky mends itself to earth. Parched gullies sever the rocky plateaus that stretch like veins into the land. Wildflowers embroider themselves into swatches of lavender and yellow. Wild rose appliques tailor themselves into the landscape. Meadowlarks guard fence posts with song as solitary cottonwoods create sun shade from the sun. Families, generations of pioneers, mountain chained to the land, proud keepers of the prairie, from wagon wheels to iron horse. People strengthened by adversity, bonded by love and beliefs. Families seasoned by the labor of faith, time, and weather. Generations passing on traditions, ingrained in hearts and hands. Families, wells of strength, the sacred part of the land. This one is I picked out. It's so appropriate for this morning. It's called Prairie Painting. Early one February morning, I discovered a prairie painting of frosty white. Flocked cottonwoods shimmered against a powder blue sky. The barren hills were softened by drifted swirls of crusted snow. Barbed wire, like jeweled strands of steel, glistened in the mellow light of the winter sun. Stalks of skeletal grass sparkled brightly. Branches of faded sage wore crystal crowns. Morning mist, pristine chandelier of white, reflected the sunlight, making it dance on icy crystals. The diamond-scattered prairie lay frozen in the sun. And now on to what we hope will be coming soon. French Creek Road. Early morning, I walk the road, trying to capture the summer for winter memories. Cascading drifts of lupin tumble down a ravine in purple splashes. Sunlight illuminates trembling grasses with halos of light. Spires of yucca blossoms pierce the prairie. Seafoam-colored sage mingles with yellow clover, scenting the soft breeze. Sweeping swaths of blue-winking flax thread themselves among the fields. Hissing irrigation geysers pulsate over hayfields. Horses swish tails in rhythm to the buzzing assault of flies, as swirling cirrus clouds feather the sky and power lines hum in the wind. The pungent stench of roadkill interrupts the moment, a reminder that life, that like life, summer will end. And the last one, Wyoming Rodeo. Wyoming Rodeo, on a warm summer evening in pastel lingering light, burst out of the chutes to a clapping crowd hooting and hollering. Plain folk, real people, dressed in Stetson hats with big buckled western jeans and boots, and bold striped shirts of pink and teal. Steers bellow, calves bawl, horses whinny, as riders bucked and thrown hobble off the powder furrowed arena. Hooves flail and steers charge. Dust swirls evaporate in the excitement as lassos whip the air and hats fly. Insects flicker in the arena lights. Metal gates clang to the thud of pounding hooves. The smell of burgers sifts through the stands. From the crow's nest, the local announcer jokes with the face-painted rodeo clowns, calling out winners, events, and hometown names. The American flag pulsates in the wind with anticipation, determination, and pride. All that is cowboy, Wyoming Rodeo.
Eugene, we want to thank you for joining us today and reminding us about the importance of arts and culture. We appreciate you taking this time to visit the Wyoming Senate and sharing your words. And I've got a little token for you from the Wyoming State Senate. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Some of those poems really struck home, that's for sure. Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, February 1, 2017, message number 237. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the following bill by the vote indicated. House Bill number 174, Game Roadkill, ayes 23, noes 35, excused 2. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President and Senate, on behalf of the University of Wyoming, I would like to remind everyone about the UW's Legislator Day this Saturday, where the bus will be leaving from the Little America parking lot at 8 a.m. promptly. The day will involve tours of a lot of our facilities, including the High Bay, which is just about finished and opened. And at 2 o'clock, everyone is invited to a Cowgirls basketball game against Air Force. We are trying to get back into first place in the Mountain West, and hopefully that game will get us there. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. House bills on first reading. House Bill 192. First reading of the House bill.
House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee 2. Sponsored by Senator Nicholas, or Representative Nicholas.
You can't get away from that Senator Nicholas.
He's everywhere. It passed the House. Ayes 50, noes 10.
House Bill 192 will refer to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 237, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 237, Community College Capital Construction, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. Passed the House, ayes 58, noes 2.
House Bill 237 will be referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. House Bill 180, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 180, Engrossed, Vital Records Fees, sponsored by Representative Wilson. Passed the House, ayes 42, noes 18.
House Bill 180 will refer to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 229, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 229, Engrossed, Game Animals Hunt Consultation Services, sponsored by Representative Summers. Passed the House, ayes 48, noes 12.
House Bill 229, referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 74, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 74, Engrossed, Agent Orange Health Awareness Month, sponsored by Representative Lindholm, passed the House, ayes 60.
House Bill 74, referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 128, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 128, Tribal License Plates, sponsored by Representative Allen, passed the House, ayes 45, noes 15.
House Bill 128 will refer to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 176, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 176, Engrossed, Veterans Tuition Waiver Program Requirements, sponsored by Representative Walters, passed the House, ayes 58, noes 2.
House Bill 176 will refer to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 220, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 220, Ad Valorem Taxation, Liens on Mineral Production, sponsored by Representative Edwards, passed the House, ayes 60.
House Bill 220, referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 159. Boo! Okay, Senator Case, what'd I do?
Not a thing. Would you give Senator Nedicott privilege of the floor, please?
How could I miss? Senator Nethercott, you know, sometimes you're just standing up talking to everybody around you, and I have trouble figuring that out. But you, Senator Nethercott, go ahead. Just a second. Let me turn your mic on. Go ahead.
Thank you, privilege of the floor.
You may.
I would like to introduce to the Senate chamber the best and brightest from Senate District 4, where you currently are located, the fifth grade class from Henderson Elementary School and their teacher, Mr. Paul Hartigan. A warm Senate welcome to these bright fifth graders.
Yeah! Welcome to the Senate. It's great to see you back there. House Bill 159, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 159, Homeless Minors, sponsored by Representative Zwanitzer, passed the House, ayes 30, noes...
No. It would fail. Hand it to me.
Passed the House on reconsideration. Ayes 35, noes 25.
House Bill 159 will be assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Bills on second reading. Reports from standing committees first.
February 2, 2017. Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom is referred Senate File 165, School Finance Education Funding Reductions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Driscoll, and Landon. No, Senator Hastert. Excused, Senator Dockstader. Senator Landon, signing for Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, Committee Number 2, to whom is referred Senate File 131, State Revenues and Expenditure Review, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Excused, Senator Dockstader. Senator Landon signing for Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 123, School Nutrition Pilot Project, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Excused, Senator Dockstader. Senator Landon signed for Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 7, to whom was referred Senate File 149, Continuation of Special Districts Task Force, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, and Pappas. No, Senator Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 7, to whom was referred Senate File 138, Certified Public Accountants Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 155, Bar and Grill Liquor License Increase, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Hastert, and Landon. Conflict, Senator Driscoll. Landon signing for Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number two, to whom is referred Senate File 140, I-80 Project Master Plan, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Excused, Senator Dockstader. Senator Landon signing for Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number six, to whom is referred Senate File 169, Migratory Bird Refuge, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number six, to whom was referred House Bill 33, engrossed, Non-Resident Motorboats Gasoline Tax Distribution, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number six, to whom was referred House Bill 61, Collection of Antlers and Horns, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number two, to whom was referred Senate File 156, State Government Efficiencies, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Excused, Senator Dockstader. Senator Landon signing for Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, Senate File 149, Continuation of Special Districts Task Force, sponsored by Senator Case, was just read in. It has a very small and reasonable appropriation, Mr. President, but I would hope that we would re-refer it to appropriations.
Without objection, Senate File 149 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Any other re-referrals? There being none, bills on second reading. Senate File 94, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 94, Franchise Business Relationships.
There are no amendments. Senate File 94, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections. So ordered. Senate File 102, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 102, Board of County Commissioners Designee Zoning Certificates.
Senate File 102, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections. So ordered. Senate File 127, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 127, Exterior Residential Storm Damage Repair Contracts.
We do have an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 27, second reading amendment number 1, page 3, line 3.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 127. Mr. President, this topic was discussed yesterday in Committee of the Whole. What we're trying to do is clean up a provision that is, and if you look in the original bill on the bottom page 3, and basically what we're doing is saying that these contractors can't promise to pay or rebate or actually do it for the deductible. The insured is still liable for that. But that if there's a discount offered for any of the goods, you know, the special deal on shingles or something like that, that can be rebated, but it has to be shared unless the insurer and the insured have agreed otherwise. If they haven't agreed, the default position is it's shared equally. Mr. President, let me read how the provision would read with the amendment. The lead-in is contractors soliciting exterior storm damage repair service in this state shall not... And then the amendment reads, pay, advertise, or promise to pay or rebate all or any portion of any insurance deductible, period. Contractors may pay or rebate any discount available for the use of goods and services, but unless the insurer and the insured agree to otherwise, this payment or rebate shall be made equally to the client and any insurer paying for the repair until the obligation of either the client or the insurer is exhausted. Mr. President, there's also one just conforming amendment, conforming the drafting standards. That's the amendment, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on it.
Discussion? You ready for the question? We're voting on second reading amendment number one to Senate File 127. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File, or second reading amendment number one to Senate File 127 has passed. Senate File 127, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the amended Senate File be read a third time? Hear no objections. So ordered. Senate File 139, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 139, Game and Fish Licenses.
Senate File 139, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hear no objections. So ordered. Senate File 145, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 145, UW and Community College Boards of Trustees, Chairman.
Senate File 145, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections. So ordered. Senate File 147, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 147, Livestock Inspections and Investigators.
Senate File 147, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Senate File 148. Second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 148, Agricultural Tax Valuation, Farmstead.
Senate File 148, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hear no objections. So ordered. Senate Joint Resolution Number 8, second reading of the Senate Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 8, School Construction and Renovation, Constitutional Amendment.
We have an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate Joint Resolution 8, Second Reading Amendment Number 1, delete the Senate Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution Number 8. Ask for the body's favorable consideration. We had some discussion that... for the floor that we wanted to try to get an amendment, so everything that's going to be basically in the amendment is in a readable format as to what the language actually is. That's what this does. We essentially deleted everything and inserted. There were a couple omissions that were in the standing committee amendment as it came out of the committee. The biggest omission was the notwithstanding language of any part of this Constitution to the contrary. The committee did take that out. It's taken out in this amendment. So the language that you see here on lines 16 through 22 and 28 through 34, that is essentially the amendment. Staff did clarify the part on the wealth-based disparity. That language on lines 19 and 20 was not in their work, but it's just a clarification, and it's within the intent and spirit of what the work of the committee did. So I would represent that this is essentially what the committee's work was as it came out. And with that, I'd stand for any questions.
Questions? We're voting on second reading amendment number one to Senate Joint Resolution 8. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one to Senate Joint Resolution number 8 has passed. Senate Joint Resolution number 8, having Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I rise just very briefly to ask members to think between now and third reading tomorrow if we present this amendment in this form to the electorate at the next general election, is it going to be understood what we're doing and why, and or is it likely to be misread in such a way that it's going to pass, not going to pass? And I think that's an issue, Mr. President, we have to think long and hard about.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 8, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the joint resolution be read a third time? Hear no objections. So ordered. Senate Joint Resolution Number 9, second reading of the Senate Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 9, Public School Financing.
We do have an amendment. Reading clerk, please read an amendment.
Senate Joint Resolution 9, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 14.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would move for adoption of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution 9. This amendment is drafted, Mr. Chairman, in response to some tremendous input that was put forth on the first reading. And I had some assistance from the able senator behind me, as well as the Legislative Service Office. And let's walk through it very briefly. On page 2, line 14, after the word shall, insert the word order, insert the word order, comma, enjoin, or otherwise. On line 15, after the first word tax, insert or tax increase. On line 16, after the word those, insert means and amounts. And then on page 3, you would strike all of line 2, all of line 3, and the words this state, period, and the word it. Then you insert the phrase this amendment on line 5. After the word tax, you would insert or tax increase. And on line 7, after law, you would insert this sentence. This amendment specifies that the legislature will determine the adequacy of funding for the public schools. So to recap that, on page 2, line 14, it will now read, no court shall order, enjoin, or otherwise require the imposition of any tax or tax increase, nor require any other provision of funding beyond those means and amounts prescribed by law to carry into effect the provisions of this section. The ballot proposition has now been reworked to reflect that language, as well as to provide that within the first two lines, the people going to the ballot box see the talk about courts imposing a tax increase. It was a suggestion by the senator from Bates Creek, and I think it's a good one. So the ballot proposition now reads, this amendment would prohibit a court from requiring the imposition of a tax or tax increase or other funding in order to provide additional monies to fund schools beyond taxes and other funding prescribed by law. This amendment specifies that the legislature will determine the adequacy of funding for the public schools, and that is the amendment, Mr. Chairman, and I urge favorable consideration by the body.
Discussion? We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 of Senate Joint Resolution number 9. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 of Senate Joint Resolution 9 has passed. Senate Joint Resolution number 9, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate Joint Resolution be read a third time? Heard no objections. It is so ordered. Bill's our third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, through the diligent and dutiful efforts of our Senate staff who monitor our every move, I do have a consent list. I move third reading consent list.
Senator Perkins, I didn't catch all that. Would you repeat that, please?
I could probably say it one more time. Through the due diligence and efforts of our Senate staff, who monitor our every motion and move, I do have a consent list. We do have a consent list. I, accordingly, I move third reading consent list, which is as follows. Senate File 117, nationwide multi-state licensing system collection agencies. Senate File 142, Community Mental Health Payment Reform 2. Senate File 150, Long-Acting Reversible Contraception. And Senate File 166, State-Funded Capital Construction.
Having read three separate times, the question is, does anyone want any of the other Senate files removed from the list? I didn't think so. Having read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 117, Nationwide Multi-State Licensing System Collection Agencies. Senate File 142, Community Mental Health Payment Reform 2. Senate File 150, Long-Acting Reversible Contraception, and Senate File 166, State-Funded Capital Construction. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll for the consent list?
On the consent list, Agar?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe? Dockstetter,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Ellis,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Hastert, Hicks,
aye.
Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Meyer, no. Moniz,
aye.
Nethercott,
aye.
Pappas,
aye.
Perkins, Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Platern,
aye.
Wasserberger,
aye.
President Bebout.
Aye.
On the consent list, 29 aye, 1 no. Senate File 117, are there any changes? Driscoll, aye to no. Closing, Christensen, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Closing vote closed. Senate File 117, 26 aye, 4 no. Senate File 142, are there any changes? Meyer, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 142, 30 aye. Senate File 150, are there any changes? Boner, aye to no.
Agar,
aye to no.
Bouchard, aye to no.
Hicks, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Closing vote closed. Senate File 150, 24 aye, 6 no. Senate File 166, are there any changes? Hastert, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Rothfuss, aye to no. Pappas, aye to no. Moniz, aye to no. Anselmi Dalton, aye to no. Closing vote. Meyer, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 166, 24 aye, 6 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 117, Nationwide Multi-State Licensing System, Collection Agencies, Senate File 142, Community Mental Health Payment Reform 2. Senate File 150, long-acting reversible contraceptions, and Senate File 166, state-funded capital construction, have passed the Senate. Senate File 57, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 57, Motor Vehicle Franchises Exception, sponsored by Senator Case, an act relating to motor vehicles.
I believe there's an amendment. Reading clerk, please read that amendment in.
Senate File 57, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 20.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. President, in my continuing efforts to meet the concerns that some have expressed about this bill, I wanted to add and make it clear that anyone coming into the state of Wyoming to offer automobiles as a direct sale manufacturer would also provide service to those vehicles. So that's the purpose of this amendment, Mr. Chairman, and it goes into the definition of direct sale manufacturer, and it adds the word and services. And let me track in the entire definition so you can see that we really have done a remarkable job of tightening this up. It's on page 2. The definition begins on line 17, and it's Romanet 16, Mr. President. A direct sale manufacturer means a person licensed under WS 3116-104A Romanet 9 who is engaged in the business of manufacturing, constructing, or assembling new and unused vehicles and who sells and services, that's the amendment, vehicles of that manufacturer's line make to the general public. A direct sale manufacturer shall not include an affiliate or wholly owned subsidiary of a manufacturer's line make that is presently sold or has previously been sold in this state through a new vehicle dealer. That's really the crux of the bill is in that definition as to who can come in and offer to sell cars to the general public as a direct sale manufacturer and not via a third-party owned franchise relationship with the dealers. Mr. President, I think it's a good move to make it very clear that whoever comes into the state will not only have to provide, be able to sell these vehicles, but must service them as well, so that it's a level playing field between these two very different modes of selling vehicles, but it does the ultimate that I can possibly reach and figure out to protect our existing dealer network. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask the bringer of the amendment whether this requires that entity to actually service have parts and service within the state. It says that they have service, but would that allow them to go out of state for service, or would this require them to have a location within the state to do parts and service?
Before the sponsor speaks for a second time, Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I would submit that it does not say they have to have service in the state. It says it sells and services those vehicles, and as some manufacturers do, the services are out of state, the sales are in state, but they do service the vehicles, but we're not saying in the state. It's a good attempt at trying to improve the language, but I don't think it does it.
Further discussions. Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, having sat in the committee discussions on this one, the intent or the word from the Western States representative of the company that's interested in this, they talked about the customer satisfaction and why they'd be very interested in providing service. You know, it occurred to me, do we try and define service as a transmission? What do we define it as? And I also got to thinking there are cars that get shipped in and out of this state today with different issues, and so I don't know how we really get our hands around trying to legislate a level of service, if it's recharging a battery or if it's replacing all the running gear. So I don't know that we have a clear answer other than I'm not sure we define it for anybody else to that level.
OK. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. And on the issue of parts, you realize now that all franchises basically have a centralized distribution of parts. The parts that are actually kept on the shelves on dealers is very limited anymore. What they have basically is a next day shipment of parts if anything is needed. So when you get into parts, then you actually start getting into the current franchise operations that are in the state, and essentially there's a different business model now, because you're the current franchise holders in this particular business model, they'd have a regional distribution center that had the parts on the shelf that are normally used, and they'd be available within a day to be shipped into the state of Wyoming. They do the same thing with farm equipment parts. Nobody really has a parts inventory like they used to, because they found in their model that they can have these regional part distribution areas, and they can service several states with a lower inventory cost on parts. And that's just the way everybody's doing it, whether it's ag, whether it's cars. So the parts really aren't, I think, an issue to that. But indeed, we were told that essentially, if you don't have good customer satisfaction, which will include service, you got to have a critical mass of vehicles around an area before somebody would make that investment in service. And that critical mass is starting to occur. It's more so in the state down to the south of us. It's like the car I drive. I've got to go down to Colorado for service on it. It's a little inconvenient, yes, but we don't require that particular manufacturer to have service in the state. And that's a decision of inconvenience that anybody should be able to make in a willing buyer, willing seller situation, Mr. President.
Anybody else for the first time before the sponsor speaks for a second time?
That makes sense.
Anybody else for the first time? Senator Anderson, do you wish to speak for your second time?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think what the good senator said is for low-volume dealers, whether it be ag, truck, or automotive, but the larger dealers certainly have inventory and more inventory than they've ever had of parts. So it just depends on your model. And if the model is low volume, then the Internet works quite well for you.
Further discussion? Senator Cage, for your second time.
Well, Mr. President, thank you. This bill's had quite a journey. We're trying to allow our Wyoming citizens to purchase automobiles by a little different model that's promoted now by one company that doesn't own any other dealers, doesn't manufacture any lines that are sold by other dealers, has no connection. It's an entirely new model. And they want to be successful. And if you read the testimonials from their customers, they seem to be achieving that. And you bet, Mr. President, they want to service the vehicles that their customers sell. Does that mean all the service conceivably would be done here? I doubt it. They're complicated cars. There might be things that. But, Mr. President, they want to give good customer service. They're committing to give service. They committed in the hearing to give service. And I've just brought this as we've had belt suspenders, and now I think I've got I'm not sure, a few safety pins I'm putting on this to get these pants held up here. And these pants are up so hard and high that we should just pass this bill. Vote for this amendment. It adds services, and let's pass the bill.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57 has passed. Senate File 57, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Bill pass. Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
All right.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 18 aye, 12 no.
Senate file 57. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate file 57 has passed the Senate. Senate file 89. Third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 89, Presumptive Disability for Firefighters, sponsored by Senator Landon, an act relating to public health and safety.
We do have an amendment. Reading clerk, please read that in.
Senate File 89, Third Reading Amendment, Number 1, page 4, line 16.
Senator Meyer.
Which one is it? Presumptive Disability. Oh.
Are you ready?
Yeah, we'll jump up, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move... Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate file
89
and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, what this amendment does is goes in and does a couple of things. One, it holds the commission's feet to the fire that they have to make a determination within 120 days. It also says that if they haven't made a determination within 120 days, then the presumption is indefinite and carries on without anybody having to worry about whether they're going to come back after them. I think it puts a little bit of sideboards on there and make sure that... That these folks get the services that they need, so we're not leaving anybody out in the cold because the presumption remains. I'd ask for the body's favorable consideration.
Discussion? Senator Landon.
Mr. President, appreciate the work of the good senator from the East. If you track this all the way in, fellow senators, and it is a lengthy third reading amendment, but you know what? It works, and it's a friendly amendment. I think it shines this bill up. It tightens it up, I support the amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Coe.
Mr. President, question to the sponsor. What's magical about 120 days? Why 120 days?
Further discussion? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. And just follow up on that same thing. I mean, we talk about 120 days. If I understand what this does is that is it the Workers' Compensation Division, is it the Medical Commission, or is it the board that administers the pension plan on the disability, or is it a combination of all those? Do they have to have that determination made within 120 days? And if they don't, then I assume with the presumption that the disability comes in, or the disability comes in, that the other injury, illness, disease is covered, and it moves on. And I guess we're talking about some pretty complicated illnesses, Mr. President. We're talking about and some causes that appear over a long period of time. And so the purpose of the bill, as I understood it, was to provide some relief, because if you go out and look at how hard it is to prove a cancer or leukemia or some kind of lymphoma, the number one cause of all of those things is smoking. And so if you've ever smoked, you have a real tough time making that. But the point of that is you know, I've actually done some of these in workers' compensation cases, and they're not easy cases. And I'm wondering, what's magic about the 120 days? Is it better to get I understand some finality. I understand the reason you want finality, but is it better to have it right, or is it better to have it fast? And that's my question. I thought I was in favor of the bill, but now I'm not sure because I don't understand the 33rd Amendment that comes in here at the 11th hour. We're trying to track it in, and I don't understand exactly what the amendment does. And so I think I like the bill, but I don't know if I like it with the amendment. That's my problem.
Anyone else for the first time? Senator Rossless.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the same concerns where the 120-day limitation that's placed on line 21, 20 and 21 right now are broadly, unless the contrary is proven, which is flexible, and that provides effectively both sides, I think, with some time. When we put the 120 days on, I am entirely uncertain how that ends up affecting it. In the real world, I don't think we've had any testimony. We haven't heard from anybody as to whether or not that's a reasonable threshold. It does seem that it could take a lot longer to prove or disprove, but we have a hard, fast date that might lead to unintended consequences. Mr. President, for me, this is too much of a third reading amendment without extensive debate, without further consideration, for me to support the amendment at this time. It may be the right thing to do, but I think the bill as it stands right now is a good bill. I worry about it with this amendment on it. I urge the body to resist the amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Meyer, for your second time.
Well, first of all, it's not the 11th hour. We've got committee meetings on the other side of the body and three readings over there. It is the 11th hour in this body, but it's not the 11th hour in the process. So, Mr. President, the 120 days to that, I felt that 30, 60, 90 days definitely would be too short for that to move forward and would probably cause some problems with the commission. And 120 days from my perspective was enough time to get the job done, and it was also I think a reasonable period to say that if somebody's getting has this disease, they've got this problem, that at a subsequent date or something, if somebody comes in, it would people got to get on with their life, and you do need to have that finality, and that's why the 120 days, Mr. President, and I think this does just go to the one commission. It doesn't cover all of them to the question that the senator from Natrona County had. So it doesn't staff didn't have the time to reach in and catch every one of them. It just goes to the medical commission and the folks that are covered under that. Mr. President, the other reason I brought it in is that I had a little bit of concern as to a blanket presumption, presuming in these cases that we are going to pay without a review that had some finality to it. So it's my attempt to make the bill a little better. Reached out to both the sponsor and to the tall senator from Natrona County and looked at it, got their input, and they've had copies of it for the last 24 hours or since last night. They looked it over, tracked it in, and I'm really kind of relying on their representation, Mr. President, because they know the bill a lot better than I do. Had they not said it was all right with them, essentially I never would have had it proposed. So it's not like I've got any particular insight in it, but I relied on the sponsors to give me some guidance. So with that, Mr. President, vote it up, vote it down. We can always change it in the House if we have to, but I was just a little bit uneasy voting for the bill in its current form.
We're voting on third reading amendment number one to Senate file 89. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has failed. Senator Landon.
I can't vote for the President, thank you. And I do appreciate the efforts on behalf of my friend from the East. But I also wanted to rise and tip my Stetson to the Senate, because this bill, like the previous one, has gone through quite a journey. It's a fascinating process that we get to involve ourselves in. Last summer, I had a good friend come to me and describe the story that I shared with you, and he said, how can we make sure that this doesn't happen to another family? And I said, well, I tell you what, let's work on it. Let's see what we can do. I don't want that to happen to another family, and I think we have provided a vehicle where it won't. But it took every one of us, and it took a Labor and Health Committee working very hard on this bill, and it took a lot of work out here on the floor. I think the bill is ready, Mr. President. I think it does what we want it to do. It's tight. I think it's polished up and a good piece of legislation that's going to help our volunteers out there. It's going to help our other firefighters. I think it's a good piece of legislation. Just wanted to tip my hat to everyone. Thank you.
Senate File 89, having read three separate times. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I don't even know where to start with this, and here's my concern. Presumptive disability for firefighters, and we all have a choice. Everybody in this body has had a choice to choose your profession, and when we go through this process and you select your profession, each and every one of those has a certain level of risk associated with the choice. The free will and choice, this isn't coerced. It's not forced upon you. So my concern is if we pass this because there is a presumptive disability associated with smoke and some of the things enumerated, what are we going to do next year? Because if you're in law enforcement, we know that's a very stressful component, and we know that there's a preponderance of the medical literature that shows that stress causes heart attacks and a whole host of other illnesses and stuff. Are we going to do presumptive disability for law enforcement if they have a heart attack in the future associated with this? And then what about when we come back in and we have other people who choose to be mechanics as their profession? And they may work for a state agency or a local government, and they're routinely immersed in oil and grease and other things that are known carcinogens. But they've chose that profession. They chose to accept a certain level of inherent risk by the profession that they've chosen. My concern is once we go down this road and we say it's a presumptive disability for firefighters, then we're going to do this for mechanics, we're going to do it for law enforcement, we're going to do it because there is a whole host of professions out there that predispose people to certain diseases. It's just the nature of your job. But you weren't coerced to do this. So I'm really worried where we're headed with this bill, Mr. Chairman. We hope that the instances that the good senator from Natrona County talked about never happen. I would continue, rather than add a presumption on this, maybe we ought to go fix those instances and make an appeals process or work back through there to make sure that that doesn't happen. But this broadens it so broad now that we're going to go into every profession that has some level of risk. So, Mr. Chairman, I just got a lot of concerns where we're headed with this, because I can't rationally say that there's associated risk for firefighters, that there isn't for anybody else that has some level of risk in their career. It's a choice, folks. With that, Mr. President, I just wanted to express those concerns. I just think we ought to be careful.
Okay. Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, I had initially anticipated that the folks paying the bill for this, the cities, towns, the counties with fire departments, would oppose it. They've not. So I'll vote aye, because they're the ones that are going to be writing the bill, paying the check. I guarantee you, though, we'll be back, session after session after session, trying to figure out where are we going to find the money to fund this. This bill takes one sympathetic case, a person with testicular cancer, and we have now put probably half the diseases conceivable into this bill as presumptively job-related, and we will see, I predict, a raft of early retirements, full disability, full pension, just as has happened in other states. And we'll be struggling with this one for years to come. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I think it's really a red herring to talk about this as opening the floodgates to God knows what. Mr. President, this profession is at a special risk because of the way our construction has changed, because of the number of unknown chemicals, many of which are carcinogenic, that they're exposed to. And I think the literature well supports that there is a much higher rate with this profession. There are risks in other professions. There's plenty of risks in mine. I sign up for workers' comp, and I am covered by workers' comp because I know their risks, and they're pretty clear accidents. You get bucked off a horse, put your back out shoveling. Those are things workers' comp routinely handles. This risk is a much heightened risk of cancer, particular cancers, other diseases, because of the nature of the exposure that these people have. We'll probably get some more cases. They'll say we ought to be in the same thing. We can judge those on their merits and dispose of them on their lack of merits, as the case may be, Mr. President. But this bill is well justified. I don't think it is going to provide a runaway. It will provide some more costs to the cities and to the fire districts, the counties. They're aware of that, and they have not been opposing this bill. They're aware of the tragedy that gets caused because of the occupational risk. So I urge the Senate to pass the bill.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the Senate. I'm a mechanic, and to kind of compare what I do to what a firefighter does, I also had an opportunity when I was in Seattle to go through firefighter training 101 as part of CSG West. And it was amazing to me to spend a day and the training that a firefighter goes through in their full gear. And I can tell you, it's nothing like what I was exhausted by the end of that day. And, there's just no comparison. And as far as where the money's going to come from, we have a comp fund, workers' comp fund, that's pushing $2 billion right now. Years ago, we had a special session, I believe it was back in the 80s, that said that, we didn't have money then. And today, a few years ago, there was a bill that brought the benefits back up for the workers, back to, I think, late 80s, early 90s kind of level, from what that was. We have a bill coming through giving our employers a holiday on that, much deserved. But this money and the funds in that are for the working families of Wyoming that put into there. And those firefighters contribute to that. And that's where it's going to come from. To think we're going to have to come back and figure out a place to fund this in the future, you know, we won't. There's more than enough funds to take care of it. And there isn't any chance that we're going to have to be looking at ways of funding it in the future. I'm in for the bill.
Senator Baldwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to belabor all the points. I think we've covered most of the points well. Workman's comp. I just wanted to add a couple things. I'm on and for the bill, but I think I'm hearing in the talk, I think we're talking a lot about the firefighters. We're talking about those people. And I want everybody in here to consider they're not those people. These are your friends. These are your neighbors. These are your little league coaches. These are some of your fellow senators, some of your fellow legislators. And I think it's important we keep that in mind. We're doing it for them, and we're doing it for their families. It's a good, well-crafted bill. The sponsor did an excellent job. And you know, I get away from thinking of these guys as heroes. These men and women, when you guys drive home this weekend, if you can get out of town, remember that when you come across that wreck, that it's these guys that are going to come bail you out. It might be paid guys. It might be volunteer guys or gals. They're the ones that are going to go out there in a four-foot drift and dig you out of that car, perhaps save your life, but these guys do it every day. They put together lives. They see pieces. They see horrible things. And I think they need our support. But I want you to remember that they're people. These are your neighbors. These are the people that are in your community every day. They leave their jobs. Sometimes their job is fire. But they're your neighbors. They're real people. You know, look in the fishbowl behind us. There's some of those real people. And there's been a lot of them here through the week. There will be a lot of them here for several more weeks as long as we're here. But think of that when you boost vote, and I encourage your aye vote on this bill. And I'm certainly an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Vice President, would you please come up here? Hello, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice President. Members of the Senate, we're elected to come down here and set public policy. And a lot of great things have been said why we should support this bill, and I speak in favor of this bill. And when I think about it, the job these people do, and a lot of them are volunteers, and what they do for us, the risks they take, we do have a very, very well-funded workers' comp fund. I don't see their threat in the future. This bill has undergone a lot of discussion, a lot of great debate about it. We do have a good bill now. It's for the right reason, for the right time, and the right thing to do now, members of the Senate, is to vote aye. Let's move this bill out. Let's let these people have that protection for that risk they take and the unique thing that may come up with some of these diseases. So I think it's a good idea, and I would ask you to support it. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, for my second time. So let me see if I can articulate one area where I think there's a little bit of a loophole here within the bill. So if you go to page 6 and you look at line 6, and here's the question I have, and I actually thought about raising this earlier, but given the discussion that we had, I do think it's worth pointing out. It says, has been exposed to the hazards involved in firefighting during the minimum period of employment. And the question I have is, based on the preponderance of the literature, what's the level and intensity of exposure that now we're talking about? Because we're rolling in volunteer firefighters. These are my neighbors, live with these guys every day. Many of them are very good friends of mine. But when I read that, this is where I see the potential for a lot of mischief. How many exposures? 1 in 10 years as a volunteer firefighter, does that now constitute that you actually did one structure fire? Is it 2 fires a year? How much inhalation do you have if we're just, which is very common in rural areas, very rarely do we get into structure fires. It's mostly ditches, haystacks. We're not exposed to a lot of significant carcinogens at that level. I just worry because we've said you just have to be exposed. It doesn't tell you the number of times you have to be exposed. Surely within the preponderance of the medical literature, there's a threshold to be exposed for most before you incur these diseases. I just look at this and I say, you know, at some point in time, we're all at risk of cancer and we're all at risk of diseases, but if I get exposed once in a 10-year period, does that constitute a presumptive case for me to go in and ask for the remedies under this bill? So I just see there's going to be potential cases that happen that really aren't anything related to their firefighting duties, but yet we've carved them out for participation in the program. Mr. Chairman, just questions I have about the bill.
Senator Peterson.
President, a quick answer to that concern is yes, it could be one incident. The bill spells out case-by-case basis. They'll be looked at carefully. But my point is, in my particular area, we have a volunteer fire department. I don't volunteer for that fire department. I don't ever have the desire to volunteer for that fire department. But my hat's off to them for those that do. It's not their full-time profession. They could have 1 week of training, 1 month of training, and respond to the first call, and it would be a catastrophic event in our area with chemicals, and we have industries up there that, it could be just one fire that could cause lung damage, permanent, a cancer, and that's why the bill specifies a case-by-case basis. So, a short answer to that question, yeah, it could be one incident and justified.
Senator Landon, for your second time.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And the further answer to my friend's question is that there's a very strong rebuttal clause in this bill. So, you know, one time, and maybe it wasn't catastrophic, it says right on page 9 that by clear and convincing evidence that the risk factor, accident, or hazard was not associated to the firefighters' service. There's a very strong rebuttal clause in there. You know, I do respect everything that's been said, but I also want to point out that the large community in the senator's district sent me this letter. And the city manager said the following. He said, "We believe that the presumptive legislation is first and foremost the right thing to do for our firefighters. In addition, we feel that any increase in the workers' compensation premiums will be negligible compared to the financial impact on our self-insurance fund when dealing with the treatment of a cancer patient." That's the offset that we've talked about throughout this bill, Mr. President. On and for the bill, I think it's ready. I think it's a good piece of legislation. Thank you.
Senate File 89, having read three separate times, the question is, shall Senate File 89 pass the Senate? Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case? No. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger? Aye, President Bebout.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 2 no.
Senate File 89, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 89 has passed the Senate. Senate File 1. You grabbed the wrong one. Trying to confuse me. Senate File 134, third reading of the Senate File. Mr. Vice President, would you come up here, please?
Senate File 134, School Finance Class Size Waivers, sponsored by Senator Wasserberger, an act relating to school finance.
There is an amendment. Would you please read that amendment in?
Senate File 134, Third Reading Amendment Number 1, delete the first.
Senator Bebo. President Bebo, excuse me.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice President. I move Third Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 134. Members of the Senate, what this amendment does, if you'll recall this bill, it does with the K-316 and under requirement that's in our statutes, and that statute is 2113307, specifically A, little 4. And the two amendments that it deletes is the Standing Committee Amendment, which went into that particular statute. Instead of deleting the amendment or deleting that statute like the original bill did, it went in and specifically said that they would not have to have the waiver. And then the other committee hall amendment by Senator Ellis, what it did was just with clarifying language to the Standing Committee Amendment. Members of the Senate, I remember this was in 2011 when we had the discussion about K through 3 and it should be 16 and under. And it's sort of ironic the way this occurred. I want to share that with you to give you a little bit of background of where I'm coming from. I've always had a problem with this and how we do this, and it's the only one that we specify. We do K through 3, 16 and under, and in 2011 we did a recalibration, and we came to the legislature with that recalibration. On a third reading amendment from the House, it was proposed that we change that, and it said very specifically, and that's spelled out in 2113307A4, that in K through 3 it shall be 16 or under. And there was really, it wasn't in the prototypical model. There had been no discussion about it. And I can't recall how I voted on that. I think I might have voted no. But there was really no opportunity to see why we should do it. And then you look at the numbers of where we are today, you fast forward, and in our 16-to-1 on the waivers, by putting that into law, we had waivers. And a lot of school districts every year request these waivers because they cannot comply with it. And what this really does, Mr. Chairman, if you adopt my amendment and you go back to the original intent of the bill, you take the capacity issue of how we build our schools. I want to share some information with the body about that. Presently, the average classroom capacity in our state for K through 3, we have 1,082 worth of surplus seats. 4 through 6, 1,608. K through 6, 6,300. If you look at the overall capacity of our state, all secondary utilization rates, by statute, we have to have 85% of the institution has to be for classrooms. We are 60% of that. We're totally underutilized. We have a capacity of 65,000 seats or students, and the enrollment is 44,000. The whole point of all this, Mr. Vice President, is we really don't need to have a K through 3, 16 and under mandate. And I listened to my school boards when I went up there and we started talking about what's going to happen this session with all the proposed reductions. And I said, what can we do? What are some of the things that we can do to give you back more local control? And they said, take away the K through 3, 16 and under. If we want to do it, let us do it. The classrooms are built to the size that we can do that. Hopefully the classrooms will be built, and they are being built to the size that can go to larger classrooms. That's not the debate here. We're just going to take away that requirement, let the local school boards do what they do. And I think you'll have a better product. You'll have a better system set up. The interesting thing about it, when I got into this and started realizing it, all of the other different schools, the way we set up the capacity is by rule and regulation. The legislature really doesn't tell or mandate how that's done. It's by rule and regulation. Of course, the School Facilities Commission has some input into that. But to me, that might be a policy decision we should make. That's not what this is about, Mr. Vice President. Is to go back to the original intent of the bill to eliminate the K through 3, 16 and other requirement, let our local school boards make their own decisions. I'd ask that you support the amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Coe.
I support the amendment, and the President's exactly correct. It's hard to find a district that hasn't applied for this waiver. But I can tell you that districts know, superintendents know, principals know, school boards know, that K-3 is important to have smaller class size, and they'll do it. They'll do it whenever they can. But like I said, it's really hard to find a district that hasn't applied for this waiver. And so I support the amendment. I think it's workable. I think as we proceed down this road of trying to fund schools, this is important. Ask that you support the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, and I think the amendment has far-reaching ramifications, and I believe that it deals with the school facilities and the number of classrooms that are built within each building. And so this has an impact to a building directly to the north of this building here in Cheyenne, and would change the requirements that the School Facilities Commission has put together for schools in this community that we live in during the session. And so I think the amendment has further ramifications. I agree with the good Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, who has served with me for so many years, that we need to do away with the waiver and the paperwork of the waiver and the 100 hours that the Wyoming Department of Education spends dealing with the waiver. There's no reason for it. Every district in the state is granted the waiver, so if it's 100% since 2011, why are we still doing it? Let's let it go away. But let's not change the school facilities ratio for per student square footage on our buildings. Let's stay with that. And so I would ask you to vote no, and I think it has not only ramifications for our capital city here in Cheyenne, but also for your larger school districts, Natrona County and even Campbell County, although I would argue that my school district particularly has benefited with many elementary schools, and unless there's a capacity issue, which we just lost 500 students this last year, it would not impact us at that time, but it would in the future. So on and against the amendment, with great respect for my chairman and for my speaker and my president.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, when we first heard this bill in committee, I direct you to look very carefully at the fiscal note. The first paragraph talks about how by eliminating this particular statute that we would save approximately 100 hours of WDE staff time in data collections. And then you go on to the second paragraph, and it starts talking about the School Facilities Commission supplemental budget request, some impacts to Laramie County School District number 1. And then if you keep reading it, so it could change the elementary school capacity calculation. I think when if you look, we've got two co-sponsors of this bill. One of the primary co-sponsors, or one of your two co-sponsors, brought us the amendment in committee, which reinstates it and doesn't eliminate or repeal the entire statute, but amends it. And so when we worked on this committee, it seemed like a no-brainer to me. Yes, let's save 100 hours of WDE staff time, not by eliminating waivers altogether, but by making a process where they're more routinely dealt with. By repealing these amendments, this is something I don't support, because as we discussed this on first reading, I don't believe there was any discussion on this bill. And anytime we're looking at legislation that could impact a lot of years of study and work in developing priority lists for our education facility needs, I don't think the public has had a fair opportunity to weigh in on that. I certainly don't have feedback from my school districts about how this would change what their understanding is or their assumption is of how we're going to move forward with our facilities. So I'd strongly urge you to vote against this amendment.
Others that would like to speak on the amendment. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, and I have similar concerns to what we just heard. When we looked at this in committee, there was a lot of concern. We had a packed room full of people that had concerns about it. And the understanding that we had was that there wasn't an interest in really the reconfiguration from the school facility standpoint, but that there was an interest in getting rid of the waiver process, which was just a bureaucratic nightmare and didn't serve a lot of purpose. So the committee was comforted by that. We put forward the amendment. Everybody in the room breathed a sigh of relief, and we all moved on. Mr. Chairman, when we restore it to the original legislation, it's hard, really, at this point to fully debate it, because we're absent all of the objections that we would have heard in the committee. I'm concerned that there were a lot of members of the public that would have liked to have provided that testimony, but didn't do so based on an understanding of how this bill would end up going, which now we're switching it back. And What I will say, Mr. Vice President, is that the statutory requirement for 16 to 1 in K-3 does serve a purpose. Through our funding model, we fund K through 6 at 16 to 1, and then we fund 7 through 12 at 21 to 1. There is strong evidence that indicates those small class sizes in K through 3 are an important aspect of our education. It's a critical part of why we are successful. And in recognizing that and in having concern that not enough teachers would be hired, the districts would not take it seriously, there wasn't an actual authoritative requirement that they go to 16 to 1 in those early years, we added it just for those 3 years in statute. We made it very clear that while there is a desire to have flexibility throughout the rest of the years, that's fine, do what you think is right as the districts, the legislature felt it was very important at the K through 3 to say we need 16 to 1. It makes a difference. We're funding at that level, and we want to see that level adhered to. Now, we have heard certainly that many districts do not feel that they're capable of implementing that due to limitations on their space. We respect that. We have the waiver process. But we also know that districts are striving to achieve that. My district is very close. My district does that because we have this mandate. The mandate would not go away. The waiver process would go away as it's currently standing. This amendment would change that. It would release that flexibility, and it would further shake up the school facilities in such a way that we would probably end up having to reconfigure the list once again, Mr. Vice President, and I don't think anyone likes to see the list reconfigured. It's a concern that I certainly have. As a third reading amendment, I'm very concerned that we have not had a robust enough debate, enough input, feedback from the community to support such a significant amendment, and I urge the body to reject third reading amendment number 1 to 134.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, it's my understanding that this amendment, if we adopt it, will save money in a number of ways, reduce administrative expenses. We need to do that, and although it doesn't explicitly take money in or out,
Senator Scott, is your microphone, like, near you?
I think it's appropriate, Mr. Vice President, to ask for the yeas and nays on this one.
Further discussion, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Just a couple points of clarification. I listened to the talk this morning. My understanding is that I had this concern when I first read the amendment. And that was, did this affect the funding in the model? And my understanding is, and please, I'd like the sponsor of the amendment when he takes a second time to confirm for me, my understanding is this does not affect the model. This does not affect the funding of class size that goes into the model. What this does do is it will affect the capital construction, will affect school facilities, and so ultimately, I'm looking at that and I'm trying to think, if we've got, while it obviously this having this is not the only reason, but I believe it's probably contributed to the fact that we have such excess capacity around the state. Unfortunately, that capacity is not portable. We're not able to take capacity where we have it, extra capacity where we have it, move to places where we need it. But I think what that's showing is there's a trend that we've overbuilt. We've got too much capacity in the state. I mean, we've had an outflux of people in some communities. To our friends in the north part of the state, they've had certainly more than others, but statewide, there are some other areas that have growth, and there are a couple of areas in the state that are continuing to grow. But down, we're down less than 1,500 students statewide. So we do have a lot of capacity. Something needs to be changed because you go back and look at statistics, we are overbuilding. Thank you, Mr. President. Or Mr. Vice President.
Anyone else for the first time before the sponsor takes his second? Seeing none. Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Some good discussion, and I'll try to answer some of the points. First of all, to my colleague from Natrona County, the majority floor leader, it does not affect the model. It has nothing to do with how that money goes out and is distributed to all the school districts. The second thing to my colleague from Campbell County, it is far-reaching. I mean, we're making a policy decision today, members of the Senate, about how we do this and how we look at the capital construction in the future. It's pretty simple to me, is why are you going to mandate K through 3 be 16 and under when in reality, if you in fact built that classroom that size, which we don't, let the school boards make that decision themselves and decide what kind of classroom they want in terms of how they want to do it. It's really all about this, the school board decision, my colleague from the Ivory Tower. Let them decide. I'm not saying we shouldn't have 16 or under, less than that in K through 3. What I'm saying is when we look at the capacity issue, there's no reason to have K through 3 set up separately like this. The flexibility is there for the school boards. Let them make that decision. As to the issue about another school in Laramie County, there's another bill coming out there. You can discuss that separately if you want to. But I think we need to make a policy decision of how we move forward. Let me ask you this question. How much money do you think is available out there in capital construction for the next biennium? I'll tell you, none. And why are we going to build schools now on a ratio that really doesn't make any sense when you look at it? So to me, it's a real good decision for this body to make. There's ample time for when it goes to the House to discuss it further if there's something we're missing. I don't think we're missing anything. I think it's a good idea. I think we need to do it. I would ask that you support this third reading amendment number one to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Okay, we're voting on President Bebout's motion to adopt third reading amendment one to Senate file 134. The yeas and nays have been called for. Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
No.
No. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 21 aye, 9 no.
Third reading amendment number one to Senate file 134 has passed the Senate. We're back on the bill. Any further comment on the bill? Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge your no vote on this bill. As I mentioned in committee, this scooted by with very little discussion because really what we were focused on was that first paragraph. Let's save some staff time. That's what the intent of this bill is. And you know, in working on this bill and having followed it throughout its process, I think there was zero discussion on first reading on this bill. Senator Wasser, my good colleague from Campbell County presented the amendment. I presented a clarifying amendment, and there was zero discussion on this bill. And when I think we're talking about revamping a school facilities list that's out there, I think that's an important conversation to have. But we need all the facts. We need to know what's going on. We need to hear from the people who will be affected by it. You know, looking at my county and some of the places I represent, this would definitely affect some of the planning that's underway and has been discussed for two of my elementary schools, and I know other people probably have those same concerns. But I would urge you to think, you know, when you go back home to your community and they ask you what happened with this bill, do you know how it affected your where your schools are in the facilities list? And to me, it's a frightening idea that we're going to move this bill forward without having all those facts known. So I would urge you to defeat this bill. Thank you.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, I echo the senator from Laramie County to urge you to vote no on this bill. This bill has immediate and negative consequences on some of the students you just saw here this morning. I heard from this body this overwhelming concern for firefighters and the profession they have chosen. But this bill has a negative impact on our students. There are many students here in Laramie County, and those are the only students I can speak to because those are the ones I hear from as my constituents, that are learning in trailers and modulars. So I appreciate that some members of this state have overbuilt, but certainly there are students, there are children of our state that are learning in trailers and modulars here. And so a vote yes on this means that they're going to stay in those trailers, and that is not best for the children or the people of this state. So I urge you to vote no on this bill.
Anyone else like to discuss Senate File 134? Seeing none, Senator Landon.
Mr. Vice President, thank you. I appreciate my good friends from Laramie County, and I have, as much as anyone, been involved with the situation down here in Laramie County, and it's very real. We've got issues. I will submit to you that I really am not certain that this bill is going to affect very much what we need to consider doing here in Laramie County. Much of what we have in districts like this is not necessarily a capacity problem, but a condition problem. This would lessen some of the capacity issues out across the state as we allow districts to put more students in a classroom, for example. But I tend to agree with the president. I think that we've got school boards out there who know exactly what kinds of impacts lower class numbers have on especially our K through 3, for example. I'm not sure. I cannot determine with this bill how much impact it's going to have on our school facilities issues, but I don't believe that much. I believe that we have developed that list. We know what facilities need our help out across the state, and a lot of that is not necessarily being driven by simple numbers in grade school classrooms. I am confident that we can go forward into that school facilities discussion and assure our districts out there that we're not going to forget projects that have been prioritized over the last 18 to 24 months. We know where those buildings are. We know what we have to do. The issue, Mr. Vice President, going forward for school facilities in general is simply going to be funding. But I'm not sure that this is going to have the impact that is feared. Thank you.
Anyone else like Senator Rothfuss?
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. On and against Senate File 134, and one of the difficulties we've had on the School Facilities Committee, I think, in recent years has been the fact that there is no alignment between how we fund through the model and how we fund space in schools. That's not aligned. So we, as I mentioned before, K through 6, we fund 16 to 1. 7 through 12, we fund 21 to 1. But we don't build schools to those standards. That's not how we build schools. They don't even look at that. So it would actually be very difficult for a district, if we wanted to give them the flexibility to have 16 to 1 in K through 3, to implement it, because we don't build buildings to that standards unless we explicitly say it in statute. So for right now, in K-3, because this 16 to 1 is in statute, a school district that is building a new school is able to run a classroom at 16 to 1. When you remove this, it's not up to the school district, because remember, school facilities are not a district decision. They don't get to design those schools. They don't get to make them how they want. They listen to what the school facilities department tells them the standards, rules, and regulations are for space and square footage per classroom, and that is not going to any longer allow for a 16 to 1 ratio in schools if we don't have this in statute. It's not just this problem. This is a problem we've struggled with on the committee for a number of years. This is the only place where we actually explicitly have it right, where the funding model can be realized in school facilities buildings. It's a bigger problem than just this. But for us to pull this away does the opposite of, I believe, what the sponsor is looking for, which is to give flexibilities to the school district to implement the model. When you remove this 16 to 1 ratio, the district doesn't get to choose 16 to 1 anymore. They have to do what the school facilities department tells them to, because that's how we design and build buildings, and that's how we allocate space. That's elsewhere in statute. This does not provide the freedom to the district to make the decision. It takes it away from them at K through 3 explicitly. That's exactly the opposite of what I believe the intent of this is, but that's the reality. That's what we'll see. And we will see changes to schools and how districts can actually implement those small classrooms. They won't be able to as well anymore unless they already have existing systems in place, Mr. Vice President. I'd urge the body to reject this. I would encourage, in fact, us on the school facilities select committee to look at it in the interim. Let's do this better. This is an important issue, Mr. Vice President. Let's do this better.
Anyone else like to speak on Senate file? Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, what he said. One more point. Y'all know my wife's a kindergarten teacher. She has the distinct pleasure of working with these little people every day. If she has a nice class of 12 or 13 or 14, and all of them are good kids, she can manage it. If she has one or two firecrackers, pistol kids, she can't. So when you open the door, this is my point, when you open the door, we're not going to have any changes immediately, but down the road, you've opened the door to make kindergartens and first grades bigger. It's a mistake.
Further discussion on Senate file. Yes. Senator Agar.
I just want to share a thought really quick. I went to a little country school that had two classrooms. In my first grade class, there was three classes in there. If you watch the way that old school teacher handled it, there was not math chaos. She was an amazing teacher, and I graduated with a 4.0 grade point average, and it was from the foundation that she laid.
Thank you. Anybody else like to speak on Senate File 134? Are you ready for the question?
Let me talk one more.
Yes. Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President, we need to have a little discussion about me being able to speak for my second time. Members of the Senate, let's keep an eye on the rabbit here. You know, to say that just because we pass a capacity issue that you cannot have a small classroom is wrong. We're talking about capacity and the size of the school. We're not going to take away that right. My colleague from over in the southwestern part of the state, his wife's a teacher. I commend her for that. She can have a smaller classroom. The school board can decide that locally. That's not what this is all about. We're talking about a situation where it should not be in statute the way it is. I look at the local control issue, I think, and I heard from my districts, you know, someone mentioned how can you go home and talk to your people and say that you voted for this, it's easy. That's what my school district wanted. You know, one of the things, too, that strikes me is right now in Wyoming, you know, the average classroom size for K-3 is over 17. We're performing pretty well. And yet we're going to have a capacity issue that says it should be 16 and under. We're already performing at 17. And if the school boards want to go to under 16, they can do that. Let's just don't build schools that we don't need because of a particular requirement that's not necessary right now. I would ask that you vote for the bill.
Question having been called, Senate File 134 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon? I'm sorry. And Landon? Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
No.
No. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Vebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 22 aye, 8 no.
Senate file 134. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 134 has passed the Senate. Do we have standing committee reports or messages from the Senate? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a motion?
Yes, I do have a motion, Mr. President. President, I'd move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Announcements. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I know I had an announcement here somewhere. If we have a Rules Committee meeting in a, it'll be on H-51, or is it in 51? Anyway, at noon, 15 minutes after noon, we'll have a Rules Committee meeting in that big room. Couldn't think of an H-51.
Senator Hick.
O-51.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Committee, will be meeting today at 15 minutes after adjournment in Jonah Room 727, or S-27, to take up Senate File 161, Acquisition, Exchange, and Sale of State Trust Lands, House Bill 25, Dry Bean Commission, Members' Terms, and House Bill 129, Engrossed Food Freedom Act Amendments.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, will meet in L-55 upon adjournment today to take up re-referred Senate File 149, continuation of Special Districts Task Force. And, Mr. President, the budget bill will be distributed to everybody tomorrow morning, and we'll start on first reading introduction of the bill on Monday morning. In the meantime, over the weekend, the fantastic finance people we have with LSO are offering tutorials in the appropriations room on Saturday from 2 to 4 and on Sunday from 1 to 3. The Super Bowl doesn't start till 4. For those who want to learn more about the budget, we'll go through it. And good luck to us all.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee Number 1 will meet Friday, February 3rd, 8 a.m. at Jonah S-18 to consider the following bills: House Bill 18, Child Abuse or Neglect in Military Families, and House Bill 152, Engrossed Search and Rescue Operations.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 3, Revenue, will meet in 15 minutes. That'll be 10 after the hour to take up Senate File 95, Early Retirement, Senate File 124, Taxation of Sale and Lease Transactions, Senate File 137, Sales Tax Recovery Statute of Limitations, Senate File 159, Tax Reform 2020, and Senate File 157, Education Continuing Contract Teacher Status.
Senator Case, do you have?
No, sir.
Senator Peterson, you've got a heavy load there. If you run a little late, you'll be excused, you and your committee, if you run a little late.
That'd be great, Mr. President. Thank you.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a correction to make. That was room S-18, 30 minutes after noon recess for the Rules Committee meeting.
Any other announcements? You've all heard the motion. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate will stand in recess until 2 p.m.